folks. I have to apologise for the lack of content recently, but it seems like I've spent weeks like a rabbit caught in the bright glare of American politics and the endless rolling news cycle which seemed to twist and turn on the hour. Throughout it all, since the election results issue, which seems like years ago now, I kept getting a story in my mind of a small boy who sees his honourable father murdered and his village burned down. He's then cast out into the cruel world to wander. In other words, it's the beginning of the hero's journey, which runs through almost all fantasy fictional works to one degree or another. If you followed my work for any length of time, you'll know that I've long been fascinated by what George R. R. Martin's Game of Thrones had to say about power, at least in the series before it became crap. I never read the books. Martin, as a true postmodernist, subverted our expectations, as they say, and broke the rules on how fantasy and story should be put together. But what's any of this got to do with America and the end of the Trump era? Well, what we're looking at is a narrative that for millions of Americans has been killed off early or subverted. People don't live according to just facts and empirical evidence, but narratives and stories that act as a framework for understanding the world and having reference points. In fact, many of them we take for granted without even thinking about it. But some people have noticed, and they entered academia and became lauded cultural and philosophical figures based on their canny knack of deconstructing the stories we live by. Sometimes, though, a story will be just killed stone dead, beheaded, if you like. Martin did this in Game of Thrones. Ned Stark was the archetype of the honourable man in fiction and legend. He wouldn't be corrupted. He went to the viper's nest of the capital and swiftly uncovered the evil scheme and plot at its heart, and he flatly refused to back off. Ned Stark was brave, honest and decent, and he was publicly executed for it at the season one finale. You may think you've invested in the good guy, an archetype we're all familiar with, but in this world, he dies. This isn't supposed to happen, of course. You can't just kill off the good guys, not only because they're the good guys, but because the story makes no sense. How can the evil, incestuous murderers actually come out on top? Luckily for the Stark family, the oldest son, Rod, was a skillful general and great warrior, and he immediately waged war on the families that set up his father. Finally, it began to make sense. It was a revenge story, and though the going might get tough, the elder Stark son would eventually avenge his father for himself and the family. We were in familiar territory again, until he was betrayed and savagely murdered, along with his mother, Ned Stark's wife. And it's here I think we can begin to think and ponder a little over the situation in America, because from the perspective of at least half the country, the good guys lost. Though Trump was no Ned Stark, let's be clear about that, the story was clear. Americans, especially working class white Americans, were sick and tired of globalists and urban politically correct elites bullying them and changing the country in ways they hated. Somebody had to do something, and Trump was it. Trump would restore pride and clear out the swamp. He was funny and drove the liberal elites insane with his brash and loud bombast. It was a joy to witness. He was also of the elites themselves. He was a rogue billionaire that turned on his own for the greater good of the USA. A wonderful story, and an addictive one as well. And now it's over, and for the sake of going along with the myth, the good guys lost. It's jarring to people. I'd argue that it's especially jarring to people in the Western world, and then America at that, that what they had invested themselves in culturally and politically for half a decade is over. The bad guys won. What happens now? What can happen now? Grit your teeth and prepare for the backlash seems to be the new normal. And the backlash duly arrived, though to call it a backlash is an understatement. Feeding frenzy would be more accurate. Mainly, there are two wings of the backlash. The coordinated and strategically planned higher-ups pulling the plug on a movement based mainly on the internet, and the rabid psychotics cheering it on in a foaming wave of bloodlust and fury, finally achieving their own catharsis and satisfaction as their own story reaches a victorious climax like a collective woke orgasm. One wing of the backlash is rational and calculating, unfeeling, the other a hysterical mob. The elites of big tech and capital throw the mob the heads of the defeated. You wonder how far they go, but then realise there really isn't any limit when they're declaring a sizeable chunk of the MAGA base to be domestic terrorists. The mob wants blood, and by giving it to them, the elites entrench their own position still further because they completed the story. They delivered the happy ending, from their perspective anyway. All that's left for the losing side is to flee the city, to get the hell out and keep your head down. But before people get too despondent, it's worth considering once again George R. R. Martin's story structure. It's certainly true that he subverted the traditional fantasy genre tropes, but he did it early on in the saga. The ending remains a mystery. The youngest of the Stark children were cast alone out into the world to begin what is known as the hero's journey in fiction. In other words, Martin swept aside and destroyed traditional archetypes at the beginning and having his heroes begin from a place of complete defeat. They would have to unlearn what they knew about the world. They were existing outside of a narrative which had already been destroyed. Without the protection and sound moral codes of their father, the world would be a cruel and harsh place and they'd have to adapt to survive as the hunted and vulnerable. The baying mob and cool calculations of the elites astonished them, as did the complete lack of integrity shown by the oligarchs and corporations who went after the MAGA movement. The double standards shown to a movement which was largely the creation of the elites versus how their own were treated speaks for itself. But this also reveals a certain naivety of Trump's populist movement, an expectation that the basic fundamentals of liberalism and Western democracy or free speech would be upheld when they weren't. Like Ned Stark, they marched into the Capitol, took on the system, thinking that common decency would be enough, that somehow the elites would listen and respect them. Those delusions, those narratives, have now been dispelled, and a harsh world awaits for those about to be hunted. In my view, the end of Trump also signifies the end of the populist surge which began in 2015. So it isn't just Americans who are feeling like they're slipping into some grim winter. The danger, though, is that people have no way to react to these circumstances except despair, and in many cases, possibly suicide. The irony of all this is that ending what are called meta-narratives as seen by the postmodern left is an act of liberation. The individual will be free, liberated from, say, Christianity or traditional sexual mores or respecting the history of the nation and so on. The stories are seen as oppressive to the individual. They hamper the true nature of the individual expressing themselves. The death of populism presents us with something similar. The old assurances are being swept away and the system revealed itself as never before. In one sense, that's a good thing, but on the other, it means we're about to be scattered to the four winds and cast out into the wasteland. It seems to me the human mind has always had a need to reframe great events into myths and legends and stories because they give context to a situation rather than despair and confusion. They teach us that what is happening has happened before and will probably happen again. The end of populism, crushed by the system, marks also populism as something which has become, as opposed to something which is becoming. The seed planted in the ground is something becoming. It has an energy and dynamism to it, potential, growth and vitality. The flower is the plant become. It can only wither and decay. When we look again at Joseph Campbell's monomyth and the hero's journey, we see more than a betrayed and lost farm boy in exile with the evil empire victorious. We see the boy becoming. My personal favourite trope of this kind is in Frank Herbert's Dune. The path that lay before Paul Atreides, his becoming, is so radical that it changes the reality of the universe, but his journey begins with utter defeat and betrayal. On the other hand, liberal globalism is on the cusp of a thing become, completed and revealed, finished, in all its repulsive power and meaninglessness. Maybe the era from 2015 to 2021 will be seen as something similar, a prelude, the defeat and betrayal, and maybe when the despondent young men, wondering if they're going on lists right now, return to the Citadel, they too will have become so radically different that they too will change reality. Whatever the case may be, the road ahead is long and full of dangers.